Thank you. Thank you to the Programme Committee for giving us the opportunity to present this work. These are the main contributors for the work presented in this talk. The use of HHG at 4GLS. Of course, the whole team is involved as well, but I just thought I'd put these guys up because they did quite a lot of the work. Quick outline. A brief look at the conceptual design of 4GLS, in particular the XUVFEL, because in order to understand the HHG seeding of it, you need to understand what we're trying to do. The benefits of amplifier seeding, I'll probably skip over that quickly, as we've already heard many of these benefits. And then a quick look at the conceptual design seeding scheme that we're proposing to use. Then we'll have a quick look at modelling of HHG seeding, and then some specific simulations for the conceptual design report, which was produced just at the around Easter time of this year. And then looking forward to what we're perhaps going to be doing next. So conceptual design of the 4GLS. This is the sort of layout specifically of the XUVFEL here. We have an injector, main LINAC here. Oh dear, here we go. Main LINAC here, and then we have a beam spreader here because we've got two injectors here. One is for an ERL line, which goes right the way round and then back in for energy recovery. And then we have the XUV line, which is just a single shot system, which goes around higher energy here than the 600 EV of the ERL line. So it's spread out and then is directed through the XUV fell here, and then possibly into a sort of spent beam undulator here. Typical sort of parameter that we've been using, 1.5 kiloamps, 1 nanocoulombs, and so on here. Oops, wrong way. These are some of the expected sort of performance, if you like, of the XUVFEL. It's a system designed for approximately 8 to 100 EV photon generation, giving about 8 gigawatts at 8 EV to 2 gigawatts at about 100 EV. It's a variably elliptically polarized system, as you will see. Pulses, 50 femtoseconds approximately. Good quality pulses. The frequency time bandwidth there of about 0.6 for a Gaussian, perfect Gaussian Fourier transform limit is about 0.44. So it's approaching a transform limited pulse. And with these sort of energies, and these are the electron beam parameters and so on. The first option that we look, our baseline option is this option one here for sort of 10 to 100 or 8 to 100. It's very easy to change it so that it's 8 to 100 EV. The magnetic gap that we're considering using is a 10 millimeter wiggler gap, that's gap between the undulator poles. This will mean, of course, a vacuum gap will probably be about 3 millimeters less than that to accommodate the vacuum pipe and some clearance. We're considering two undulator types, which will be in series with each other. First, we have a planar undulator, and then we will have we're going to have 8 of these, and we're going to have 5 of these here, Apple II type undulators, variable polarization to give us the elliptically polarized radiation. This is not set in stone, of course. We are considering perhaps going down to 6 EV, but we're hovering around the same type of parameters. Okay, this is the sort of baseline design we have here. Here you'll see the electrons are coming in here from my right, which is your left, coming in this direction here. And they first go through up to 8 planar undulator sections, each of about length 2 meters, and then followed by about 5 variably polarized undulators, or VUs, they are as we call them. Between each undulator module, we are going to have probably, although this hasn't been given any proper design consideration yet, we're going to be having beam positioning monitors, a phasing unit there to ensure phase matching between the undulator sections. And, of course, we're going to have strong focusing, so we're going to have quadrupoles as well. And we're going to allow about 0.6 of a metre between the undulator sections to accommodate that, giving a total length here, complete undulator length from start to end of about 33, 34 metres. There are some more detail on this and this one here, which is a poster session which has already been, so it may well still be up if you're still interested, describing the optimization that we used to get the quadrupole strengths and so on correct. And this was alluded to in the previous speaker's talk. He showed some optimization curves that we generated there. Typical output. This is just from sort of Genesis 3 steady state type simulations. As a function of photon energy here, here's the 10 to 100 EV photon energy range, and we're ranging from about 8 gigawatts down to about 2 gigawatts peak power output at the 100 EV there. And we have several comparisons here, both of the planar helical undulator, if you like, when it's in helical mode and also when it's in planar mode. And we have got the Z sort of formulism here, and plotted against the Genesis. And you can see that I mean, I think we've certainly found this Z parameterization very, very useful in the design stage. It allows you to sweep across great numbers of parameters with very little computational effort as well. And it gives very, very good results. In terms of saturation length, again, from 10 to 100 EV here, we're going, talking 5, 10 metres at 10 EV range, up to about 25, 26 metres here. This is, I say here, this is undulator length. The gaps have not been included in this length, so at this stage here, you're probably adding on another 5 or 6 metres to include the undulator gaps. The benefits have already been discussed in some detail. Just another couple down here, perhaps. It may be possible at later stages to put in sort of exotic pulses for amplification, so that perhaps a chirp-type pulses, so that we can manipulate them afterwards, perhaps giving even shorter pulses using chirp pulse amplification and then through a diffraction grating to give short pulses. The seeds, of course, may be also be useful to users in their own right. This is a user facility we're designing here. The seeds are very sought after at the minute for experiments. There's no reason why they won't be by the time we also have this built. The main thing, I think, as was highlighted the in red here, because this is important, is the we need the spatiotemporal synchronization between the seed pulse and the electrons at the beginning of the undulator. If we don't have that, we don't have a seeded undulator, and we're not going to get very much out at the beginning. So that's a very important issue. But I think one that can be overcome and successfully. So here we have the modules. Now, you can see here we're going from about 100 EV here down to 10 EV, and this is demonstrating the use of the modules. So for 100 EV, we're inputting a seed here, at the top right-hand corner, going into planar undulator 1, and because the 100 EV case is a long saturation length, you know, about the 30-odd metre mark, we need to use the full extent, all of the modules, right the way through to achieve saturation here. As we go down in photon energy, so the length of the undulator required is reduced, and we, if you like, open up the gaps here. So we've opened up this gap here for this first undulator module completely, so that the FEL interaction effectively starts here at planar undulator 2 and so on. So in going down from here all the way down to here, we have, if you like, a heat down here, the undulator is going to be completely closed, minimum gap of about 10 millimetres, and up here it's going to be open to its maximum for resonance, which will be about 28 millimetres here. And obviously we're going to have to focus, have a variable focusing system to allow the seeds to be focused to different distances through the undulator here. One of the benefits of this, of course, is that once you've generated your high-power radiation, it will all, hopefully, be saturated at the final undulator. This will simplify the optics for transport to the experimental areas. Now, a little thing here now I'm going to show is the, unfortunately, this diagram's now around the other way. The seed is now coming in from the left-hand side and travelling towards the right. Now, because the undulator modules at the beginning only need to have quite a large gap, because they only need to be risen to 100 EV, the undulator modules can be open. Here, down here, they have to be closed up to make them resonant at 10 EV. This allows us to introduce a taper in the vacuum vessel, like so. So we can actually have a tapered vacuum vessel coming in. And this allows us then to get in the low photon energy seeds, which will have the higher sort of higher diffraction. So we need to be able to have enough gap here at this part to focus the radiation in. Of course, as you go down in photon energy as you go up in photon energy or down in wavelength, then the diffraction becomes much less important. Now, for Genesis simulations, scanning over the sort of seed waste here that's required, we find for the 10 EV case, we're looking at about a 200 micron waste here as a sort of optimum value. And we can see here we have the 200 micron waste, and using the usual sort of formula for the waste for a Gaussian beam, this gives us, after 21 meters going back the way to the beginning of the undulator, we get about a 4 millimeter here. This is for one weight. So this is the actual waste, the waste size. In other words, 1 over the exponential squared of the power on the axis. So this gives us more than 4 waste widths here to input the seed into the through the system. If we only had, if we didn't have this tapered undulator, you could see at 10 millimeters here, things would be getting a bit tight. Now, I'm not going to say too much about the actual HHG seed generation, but which basically involves firing a very high intensity pulse, typically, for example, a Thai sapphire system, into a gas jet. This generates XUV radiation. There's some very good introductory sort of talks, in particular thinking about FEL seeding and so on, given at these references there. And they're worth a look if you want to find out more about that. I'm not really going to talk about that. What I will talk about is what the actual HHG output looks like. Now, the output consists of a harmonic series, an odd harmonic series, of the fundamental driving laser. That's the high-intensity laser that's injected into the gas jet. So we get many of these high-order odd harmonics generated way out to, for example, here. This is a sample for a neon gas, a noble gas, and we've gone way out here to 65 EV, which is, the 65th harmonic, which for the 800 nanometer Thai sapphire corresponds to about 12.3 nanometers or about 100 EV photons. That's a sort of typical spectrum of the output from an HHG. Another one here, we've now gone on to a different gas, noble gas helium, and you can see here we've gone out a little further in photon energy. Here we're talking, it's wavelength now, but the 100 EV photon energy is here now, around about 12.3 nanometers. These are experimental, obviously. The temporal structure, because you've got a comb of power or comb of energy in frequency space, this actually gives us, well, when you do the Fourier transform, or the inverse Fourier transform of it, this gives us a comb in time space as well. So temporally, what you get is a series of very high intensity or very high power attosecond spikes. Attosecond, when I say attosecond here, you may be talking 100-ish attosecond widths here. Here, for comparison, this dotted line here, this dotted line shows the actual the electric field, or the rectified electric field, if you like, of the drive laser. So this here, from here to here, that's the 800 nanometer Thai sapphire, and within that, for every half cycle of the Thai sapphire, you get one of these sort of attosecond spikes coming out. Now, 4GLS layout looks something like this. This is one of these sort of engineering drawings. Here we have the, you see the ERL loop going round like so. And in here, in the middle, we have the XUV fell. And in here, we have our laser seed room. So if we sort of focus in on this area now, laser seed room in here, HHG sources in here, they will be simply, they will be transported out through the optics out and into the free electron laser like so. What's in here, previous speaker showed us a little bit about what's in here, although not quite all of it. We've got a synchronised TIE sapphire oscillator, synchronised, of course, with the RF of the electrons, driving the electrons in the accelerator. Do a bit of pulse shaping. This enables some tuning of the final harmonic output into the TIE sapphire amplifier, giving about 14 millijoules of energy. And there are two legs now. First one is the TIE sapphire directly goes into the gas jet, creates the harmonics, which are then transported out. And this will cover 40 to 100 EV. Over 40 to 100 EV, we can get continuous tunability of these harmonics, because basically we just can shift the harmonics backwards and forwards in frequency space, and we can do that sufficiently to cover the complete range, 40 to 100 EV. However, for the lower photon energies, we require actually a longer wavelength drive laser than the TIE sapphire. Going to longer wavelengths allows us a bit more flexibility. You can go back to these references to read about that. And so for 6 to 40 EV generation, we will use this non-linear optical parametric amplifier, which will then pump the harmonic generation. And there's enough efficiency there. I think they're about 15, 20% efficiency, something like that. So there's enough power left to maintain harmonic generation, so we can then cover 6 to 100 EV for the input into the FEL amplifier. Typical seed energies we're getting out. Here we've got harmonic photon energy here going across our range. And these are pulse energies for the given photon energies along here like this. And these are actually experimentally generated results at the moment, or results which have been scaled using known scaling to 14 millijoules to estimate what energies we can expect at these photon energies. Now, we've been extremely conservative in our estimates. For 40 to 100 EV, we're assuming an order of magnitude below what is currently available now. This is for the design work. For the 6 to 40 EV, we're assuming, again, it's probably at least an order of magnitude below what is currently available. So we're being very careful, or as we say in Scotland, we're being very canny in our estimation of what powers we're going to have available. Of course, this could be accounted for, this loss factor here could be accounted for by very pessimistically thinking about losses due to transport from the actual HHG source into the laser. So we've got plenty of leeway there. If we were to look at the FEL, just as a matter of interest, what pulse energies are we looking at here? Up here, we've got about the 3 gigawatts is around this level here. So you can see this orders of magnitude we're talking about. This result here is quite interesting. This is a reasonably recent result. This results from two laser pumping of an HHG gas. And you can see what they've done there. They've gone over one order of magnitude just by looking at a new driving scheme for the HHG gas. So although we're up here, these guys are snapping at their heels sometimes. Of course, one of the things HHG cannot do is produce circularly polarized light. It cannot do that, thank God. HHG seeding. Now we're going to have a look at the model. Now, the seeding options we've got all these this harmonic content, and we've got to ask, what are we going to do? Are we going to try and inject this, all of it, into the undulator? Are we going to have to filter it out first? That's the question we're asking. So for the unfiltered case, we can think about the spectrum. and we can think about the FEL gain bandwidth. Now, if the FEL gain bandwidth is less than the separation between two successive peaks here, then we should be all right, because the FEL will only see one of these peaks and it should not see any of the other harmonics. Of course, we know the FEL gain bandwidth is of the order of rho. The harmonic separation between two successive harmonics is of the order of 1 over n, where n is the harmonic. For example, the 65th harmonic was here, n would be 65 here. So that gives us then that rho should be less than 1 over n. And for the values that we are expecting, and we've got about 2 by 10 to the minus 3 for rho, 1 over n is about 1.5 by 10 to the minus 2, so that should be fine. There should be no problem. The gain bandwidth of the FEL is less than the separation between the harmonics. So that's okay. Another consideration which has been raised, I think, and maybe worth thinking about, is the spatiotemporal sort of regime. What's happening there? Now, although I've got this up here, I don't really believe it, what I'm going to tell you at the moment, but I'll tell you anyway. Sorry, 5 minutes, okay. Distance between the spikes should be less than the cooperation length. So here we have the distance between the spikes is half the fundamental of the drive laser. Cooperation length is given by that. And we have this here, same here, but with a factor 2 pi down there. I'm not too concerned about that, though, because if this applies, then the laser's not really going to be seeing this spiking. It's just going to be seeing one frequency here. So I'm not too bothered about that. So let's have a look now for a 100 EV case. We're actually going to put in the full content. So we're going to manufacture a synthetic HHG seed field. We're going to use this type of... this is the sort of amplitude of the electric field and the log scale. And we've got various phases here, the phase relationships between the harmonic orders. And this has been measured here experimentally. When we do that, we generate a typical sort of HHG pulse there with the attosecond structure. Let's home in on that, and that's what it looks like there. This is for the 65th harmonic or 100 EV case. This is what the HHG field looks like. And here, F65T, so this is, if you like, the number of resonant periods along here, the number of wavelengths, okay, at the resonant frequency of 100 EV. 2,000 attoseconds, so these are attosecond pulses and separated by half the drive frequency. So that's what it looks like. Now, there is a problem. The problem is that due to Professor Nyquist, we cannot actually, because of these average codes, they sample the radiation field at best once every wavelength. So looking at the Nyquist theorem, this dictates to us that we cannot cover this complete frequency range here in frequency space. So if, for example, we look at the 39th harmonic, we can only look at the blue part there. We cannot look at either end. We cannot include that in what we're putting in. Otherwise, we'll get aliasing and we'll get spurious results out. Similarly, for the 100 EV case, the 65th harmonic, this means we cannot look at these harmonics there. So we've got to put something like that in. When we do put that sort of frequency spectrum in, remember, this was what we got for the full frequency spectrum. If we put in the truncated frequency spectrum, we're not really putting in quite what this looks like here. It's slightly different, but that's the best we can do. Power difference is there, of course. These are much higher powers because of the higher energy content down here in this log scale. However, when we do a full Genesis simulation here, you can see that this is the harmonic comb that we were talking about. This is at the beginning of the undulator for the 100 EV case. Resonance at about 12.3 nanometers. As we go through, halfway through our system, the attosecond structure is beginning to wash out, and we can see here it's only the resonant harmonic that's going. And finally, at the end, no attosecond structure left, and we have a nice clean output at the fundamental. All the other ones have been completely dominated by the FEL interaction. conceptual design, planar undulator inputting here. We have an HHG seed now of 30 kilowatts. You'll see we've filtered out all the attosecond stuff. So we've only got the fundamental frequency going in here now at 100 EV. This is the current shown in the same scale, just for comparison. So the pulse is much shorter than the current. So we put the seed in, and then at the end of the planar undulator section, we achieve this output, 70 megawatts, and we've still got a very good pulse structure here. On going through to the end now, right the way through the variable undulator section, we achieve, so this is circularly polarized now. We're getting this is in planar polarization. We're getting at about 2.5 gigawatts. Notice the pulse has increased a little. If we go to a log scale here, you can see that there's a bit more structure here, and we realize that that's probably because we've oversaturated. So going back one undulator module there, we've still got very similar powers, but you see we've got a much cleaner structure here. And if we go back one more, we've halved the power, and we've got another clean structure, but we've got a better contrast ratio here. This noisy stuff here, of course, is the SASE, which has not yet saturated. The seed has dominated, of course, all the SASE radiation. So we've got a SASE pedestal, and on top of that, we've got the nice seed. 10 EV is a very similar situation. For 10 EV operation, however, now we've got slightly higher input power, and we don't need to put the input power into the beginning. We now inject it into this point here. And at the output, we're now getting at about 6 gigawatts with good pulse structure. Going again to the log scale, we can see the SASE here with this nice seeded pulse on top. Back one, we've cleaned it up a little more. Further design work. The technical design report is due sometime endish 2007. We really need to keep up to date with the HHG development. It's rapidly progressing field. The Eurofel project that we have in Europe is looking into that. Synchronism is critical. We reckon we need timing offsets, for example, to be less than 100 femtoseconds. We think we can probably get down to tens of femtoseconds, which would be ideal for us. Need to simulate with the start to end. We haven't really done that yet. We're getting there. And, of course, we need to completely go through this iteration process of the design process, and we will keep doing that. There's a nice poster there, by the way, for the synchronism issues given in Tuesday poster session. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Papers open for questions and comments.
Are most of the applications intended to use an attosecond pulse train, or are there cases, because of the bandwidth issue, are there cases where it's of interest to use a single attosecond pulse?
We cannot generate single attosecond pulses in the FEL. The attosecond pulses are generated by the HHG seed.
Yes.
Now, that attosecond structure, as I quickly tried to show there, was washed out during the FEL process. So we do not have an attosecond structure in the output of our pulses. Generally, you're talking about 50, 60 femtoseconds full width, half max. That's what we will be generating.
That's because the attosecond structure, of course, they merge together. But if you had, say, a single attosecond spike,
yeah,
given the same bandwidth limitations, you'd still end up with a much shorter seed pulse.
No, the relative movement between the electrons and the radiation, the slippage, that attosecond structure is not going to exist. It's not going to remain. It will itself be washed out. You're not going to get an attosecond structure.
Are there any other questions? Put over there. Sasha.
Presumably, you assume that you will focus light from HHG produced in a gas.
Yes.
Then it means that you use somehow somewhere X-ray mirror, and there is a transmission issue. Let me finish the question. And also, mirror at this wavelength has narrow bandwidth. Most likely, it will wash out outer second comb structure after the light passes this mirror as well.
Ah, okay. Well, firstly, it's not an X-ray system. It's VUV, XUV, so up to 100 EV photons. There are materials around which are able to reflect reasonably well at that. Like carbon is one of them, and we have an expert in the audience somewhere. I'm in dodgy territory here when it comes to the X-ray optics stuff. But we have looked at that, or other people have looked at that. That is one of the things, it's an ongoing thing at the moment. You're suggesting that the attosecond structure will be killed by the optics. Okay, that's something interesting. Have you observed that? Or? Right, okay.
Any other questions and comments? Yes, at the back there.
Brian, I always understood that the HHG emission was unpolarized. What fraction of the power from one of these HGHG pulses is actually within the polarization acceptance of an FEL?
No, the HHG, as I understand it, is polarized, and it takes on the polarization of the drive laser.
Oh, it is polarized?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's good.
And that's you cannot get circularly polarized HHG. You cannot get that at the moment, anyway.
Okay. Let's thank the speaker again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.